week-long hiatus, or I guess technically it'd be roughly 2 weeks because we didn't record last week, but after a week-long hiatus, no podcast last week, and back in effect here with the Bright Side of the Sun podcast here, or Phoenix Suns podcast here on Bright Side of the Sun. This is Chris Abbas, as always, got Jim Kokenauer. We are on episode 24, which means we're 2 wins away from surpassing the Phoenix Suns' overall win total. We're 2 wins away from either the Miami Heat or the Indiana Pacers to be able to create an NBA Finals. And with this being episode 24, it's actually kind of ironic. We're going to talk a lot about the new head coach of the Phoenix Suns. And 24 years ago was, as you had eloquently put it before we jumped on the air, when the Phoenix Suns had kind of risen from the ashes and rose up to the Western Conference Finals back 24 years ago. How are we doing, Jim?
I am outstanding. Yeah, we were talking about that, and we discussed how 24 years ago the Suns were resurgent off the tail end of a cocaine scandal, and now 24 years later they're trying to become resurgent again on the tail end of a Lance Blanks scandal.
I promised I wouldn't say that, which I knew when I said that out loud. There's a reason why I said it out loud, because I knew then you would for sure say it on the podcast. And hey, you know what? To a certain respect, the Lance Blanks era was kind of a scandal because, you know, we put people away on Wall Street all the time for defrauding people and taking money. And we have talked about this numerous times where we didn't necessarily think that Lon Babbie was bad at his job, but we did feel that, or Robert Sarver was a terrible owner either, that maybe this might have been Lance Blanks kind of, you know, getting in there and just kind of fooling everybody with the impression that he was a great basketball mind. And so, you know, if Wall Street guys go to jail all the time for falsifying information and kind of misleading and lying to people, you know, Lance Blanks, it's a scandal. But neither here nor there. We now got a new head coach for the Phoenix Suns. But before we jump into that, I don't know if you caught the game last night. Technically tonight, because we are recording this on Tuesday. But man, how entertaining is it watching Joey Crawford referee basketball, Jim? There's no basketball games on tonight because the Spurs took care of business. But how entertaining is it to watch Joey Crawford put on the stripes and blow a whistle?
It's horrible. It's tough with some of these playoff games when you have so much at stake to watch egregiously bad calls that are blatantly obvious. The technology they have today now with all the camera angles and the slow motion stuff can help elucidate, make these guys, you know, look worse, because it gives you some of the angles that they don't have the ability to see with the speed of the game. But then just completely transparent calls like the shot clock violation they called on Indiana in the fourth quarter was completely obvious. The guys announcing the game were kind of baffled at how they managed to miss the call. And, you know, I don't know what the solution to stuff like that is, because that's been one of the big conspiracies that's kind of followed the league for years now, is that people feel like games are fixed. People hate the officiating. And you put stuff like that out, and now fans get to watch for 2-3 minutes while the game's kind of stopped and the referees are conferring and Crawford's sprinting down the court like a madman to try to make the call from 80 feet away. And it looks bad for the league.
Yeah. I don't want to delve too much into that, 'cause that's obviously more or less national, but it's definitely worth a footnote here in the podcast because of the fact that it's the only basketball being played. And when it's officiated that poorly, and here's the thing, guys, nobody's trying to screw Indiana. Nobody's trying to screw Miami. Conspiracy theorists, you know, put your swords down for a quick second here. This is just poor officiating. That's all it is, plain and simple. It's terrible officiating. It's that me first mentality of Joey Crawford trying to, you know, get out there and be a spotlight guy. And I mean, LeBron James fouling out for only the second time ever in the playoffs. And I think he even has some kind of a insane percentage of games that he's played and games that he's fouled out of. So, you know, the fact that he fouls out on a silly screen call and, you know, Dwayne Wade gets called for a travel on a step back that he does probably 1,000 times without ever being called for it. You know, the terrible shot clock violation call, just so many just poor calls. And it went both ways, which is kind of comical. It made that game, two teams that I feel match up amazing against each other, it made that game borderline unwatchable. And that's what it is, guys. Let's put the swords down. Conspiracy theorists has nothing to do with the NBA wanting or not wanting one of these teams to go to the finals. This is plain and simple just bad officiating, and it definitely needs to get fixed. We saw it all season with the Suns. The Suns were bad as is, but then when you got poor officiating out there, it just makes the product tougher to watch. And one of the things that's going to make this hopefully a more entertaining product to watch, maybe even a little bit more of a connected product to watch. It's a little different when Alvin Gentry's coaching, no connection to the team or the community. The Hunter, no connection to the team or the community. But the Suns bring in Jeff Hornacek, who played for the Phoenix Suns, was drafted by the Phoenix Suns, was part of the resurgence, as we mentioned, went to the Western Conference Finals in, I believe, back-to-back years towards the end of his tenure out here. He's the new head coach. We did a roundtable. We've all written about it. We've all email exchanged. We've all talked on the Twitterverse. Jim, what are your thoughts initially now that it's been able to soak in for about 72 hours on the hiring of Jeff Hornacek?
I love the hire. I think the Suns did a real good job with this one. I love the hire. Like, I'd love it if the NBA set up a person to watch the game from outside of the court so that he could talk to the referees on the court and keep them from making a completely idiotic move in the game tonight, by being able to review it and call down to them without stopping the flow of the game, if he can tell them they blew the call before the next inbound. I mean, I'd love it like that. I'd love it that much. Hornacek comes in with the pedigree of being a beloved son. So, like we had talked about, that 24 years ago was when Hornacek was playing with Chambers and Kevin Johnson, Dan Majerle, Mark West, Tyrone Corbin that came along with that KJ trade. Eddie Johnson, who's now the announcer that a lot of fans are really enamored with. They love his color. And so it brings some of that back, the feel-good stuff there. And I think some people had noted on it, mentioned that because of that love affair, that Hornacek will probably get a little bit more clemency than some of the previous interim head coach. And, I think, I was surprised you didn't mention it there. I guess sometimes people can't be as blunt as I get the opportunity to be. But that Hornacek should have really given a big thank you to Lindsey Hunter, because the way that all worked out with Lance Blanks and Lindsey Hunter naming him the interim, and the way all that went, and Lindsey Hunter kind of calling out players, his inability to speak and connect with the media, the bad job most people felt he did, made it really easy also for Hornacek to come in and look really good, because when you're the guy following Lindsey Hunter, it's really easy to look good, as opposed to if Gentry had stayed the whole season, then you have an established, polished coach you're kind of following who just wasn't a fit for this team, but it's a lot easier to follow Hunter than Gentry. Just like McDonough, as soon as he comes in, McDonough is following Lance Blanks, who is the villain from the last couple years of Suns basketball. So he automatically looks good. So I would think if I was Hornacek, he should probably write maybe just like a little thank you note to Hunter.
Yeah. And a couple of things I took away from the presser today, we were able to actually get down there, Brightside and SB Nation, and kind of check out the press conference as they introduced Jeff Hornacek today. We had talked about this a few times. How are they going to handle things? If Lon Babbie is at the front of all of the moves, if he's at all the press conferences doing the talking, and McDonough's either not there or a silent partner, then you kind of are going to get a feel for how this organization is running things. And the great thing that we saw is that Lon Babbie was elated for about a 2-minute introduction, talking about Hornacek's kids and his family and welcoming him here, and then immediately stepped off of the podium and handed the microphone to Ryan McDonough and said, basically just kind of looked at him and said, it's your show now, kid. This is your guy. This is your hire. This is your show to run, which is how it should be. Lon Babbie is the behind the scenes guy. He's the basketball operations guy, and Ryan McDonough is the basketball mind, the guy that's going to put together these teams with, obviously with influence from Babbie and Sarver. But I really liked seeing that out of the press conference. And then another thing that I took away from it was, you mentioned Alvin Gentry, and one of the questions that Suns beat writer Paul Coro threw at Jeff Hornacek was that he's such an amiable guy. He's a really nice guy, kind of an easygoing guy. How are you going to approach discipline? And looking at the press conference, that's kind of exactly how Alvin Gentry was. I mean, Jeff Hornacek kind of had that aura about him already of just the guy that everybody likes, everybody is fond of, very amiable, you know, very easygoing. He looked like he belonged up on the podium, didn't look uncomfortable, and it just seemed like overall just a really nice guy, the way he answered questions, the way he touched back on the past. I mean, I'm pretty sure that every Suns fan loved Jeff Hornacek's intro to being introduced, because he basically did a chronological timeline all the way back to the late 60s and the early 70s of Phoenix Suns basketball history, all the way up to the Steve Nash days, and kind of stopped there, because that's where the history of the Suns basically stopped. And now, you know, Jeff Hornacek and your man McMiracle, it's now their turn to create the next era of Suns basketball.
Absolutely. I was impressed with that too, the fact that you had the three of them all up there, and it's a stark contrast. It's the antipode of what we had with Blanks, who was always lurking in the shadows, and Hunter, who was pretty terrible with the press. Gentry obviously was very good with the press. Like you said, he was very likable, very well respected. And I think that Hornacek brings that too. He's got the street cred. Not to say that some of the other candidates weren't qualified, and I know some people were still a little upset that the Suns didn't get a chance to talk to Brian Shaw, that there were still some guys in the playoffs and they weren't allowed to do those interviews. But Hornacek has a lot more name power than, say, Budenholzer would, somebody like that, who, unless you're a hardcore basketball fan, you've probably never heard of him. So I think that works, and it's a plus, because I don't think that's the reason Hornacek got the job. I think he got it based off of his potential, his ability, his resume. He's a very smart player, very cerebral player. It fits that mold of a player that carved out a career that most people wouldn't have expected based off of hard work. He has experience with playing with great players, playing for great coaches. He alluded to that, his time he spent around Cotton Fitzsimmons, his time he spent around Jerry Sloan, and how he hopes to incorporate the things they taught him into his coaching style. He was a freelance shooting coach for the Jazz that worked with a lot of the players there. I believe he said that he was brought in to work with Andrei Kirilenko, and then that progressed to where he worked with other players on a freelance basis while he was taking a step back from the league to spend time with his family, which I don't see how that can be a demerit either. So you have that, and then his assistant coaching experience moving forward. I think that there were a lot of people that were interested in Hornacek, and if the Suns hadn't pulled the trigger on him, it is my belief that he would have definitely been a coach for another team if he chose to be, because I think there was interest from other teams.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's – I'm glad you said that, because that goes right into what I wanted to mention is when you look at – so Jeff Hornacek, I was talking to Brian McDonough after the press conference had happened, and you know, basically said that Jeff Hornacek left here, and I love the way that Ryan strategized the interviewing process with Jeff Hornacek. I'm going to kind of go off on a small little story here about what he was telling me, is that he basically staggered the interview process with a few guys and then Jeff Hornacek in the middle, and then a few other guys. And I love that strategy, and hopefully you understand here why, is that he wanted to do a few interviews first, so that way that he wasn't, you know, overly impressed or overly disappointed with Jeff as the first guy. And he wanted to have a couple of other interviews afterwards to be able to create a baseline and go, all right, so we listened to a few people, then we listened to Jeff, now we listen to a few more people. How do we feel about the process? And when Jeff had left, he went and interviewed and had very, very high praise from that spot, and was probably going to get called in for a second interview and might have ended up, you know, being gone by the time the Suns were going to wait for the finals to be over. I mean, as we just found out today, you know, Mike Budenholzer is now the head coach of the Atlanta Hawks. Steve Clifford is the head coach of the Charlotte Bobcats. Those are two guys that the Suns were interested in And now you look at Mike Malone, who is an assistant with the Golden State Warriors, is now looking at and is, I guess, in real strong consideration or might be already in talks to be the head coach in this, for the Sacramento Kings. So, you know, if Jeff Hornacek would have left Phoenix without a contract, the Philadelphia 76ers, Detroit Pistons, Sacramento Kings, Los Angeles Clippers, Brooklyn/New Jersey Nets, Milwaukee Bucks. Those are all teams that have coaching vacancies. He very easily could have left and never came back to Phoenix. So I get the frustration of, hey, we didn't interview Brian Shaw. Hey, guys, here's one part of it. Jeff Hornacek might end up being a better coach than Brian Shaw. Brian Shaw might end up being a better coach than Jeff Hornacek. Time will tell, but I think the Suns got a good one. As you mentioned, him and Ryan both have interesting backgrounds because they both rose from very, very bottom rankings, you know, video room for Ryan and shooting assistant to Andre Kirilenko for Jeff Hornacek. Two very interesting job titles that, you know, a handful of years later, happenstance happens, and now they're both at the head top position of where they wanted to be with their careers. So, yeah, I guess there's a little bit of a gripe that they didn't interview Brian Shaw. But, hey, you know, at the end of the day, he could end up being a better head coach than Brian Shaw. And I think that you hit a lot of things on that checklist by bringing in Jeff Hornacek for the Suns.
Absolutely. I was glad in this case that it really seemed to me like at the stage they were in with the interview process that they got the guy they wanted, that Hornacek came in and he killed the interview and he became their number one choice and they got him. So it's not a situation like a couple of years ago where Blanks was the third or fourth choice.
Seventh or eighth.
It's good. Seventh or eighth. Yeah, I need to like add a couple extra digits before the decimal point. But so that is different to me. The way this offseason has kind of started off is that it seems like the Suns are going out and getting their first selections. And so that's encouraging. And with these guys, they don't have the prior experience. So Ryan is a first-time GM, so he's going to be learning on the job. Same thing for Hornacek. But what you have here is a situation where with any coaches, you know, you become an experienced head coach by getting a job as a first-time head coach. And so these positions, to me, it's kind of similar to players coming out of the draft, where you can scout them and you find out everything about them and you do the interviews and go through all that process and you see the positives and see some of the negatives, everything, and then they get selected where they get selected. But you never really know how it's going to turn out until down the line. You know, every once in a while you get a guy like Shaquille O'Neal or LeBron James that comes out where it's just like, as long as you know he can stay healthy and be on the court, then he's going to dominate. But most of those guys, it can be hit and miss. I was using the example earlier, and it's apropos based off of the Pacers discussion and everything, that Paul George went 10th in that draft, so nine other guys went ahead of him that year, and none of those nine guys is better than Paul George, but that was the same draft that Smile and West went 4th. And so the same type of thing goes with these head coaches, these GMs, and you just want to hope that you end up with a Paul George and not a Wesley Johnson. So it was pointed out to me, too, that a couple months back when I was doing a game coverage for a game the Suns played at Utah, that I was discussing with one of the former staff writers on Brightside, Ray, that, you know, the Suns should definitely look at Hornacek as a candidate and interview him and look into him at the end of the season, and that was a couple months ago. So in a kind of tongue-in-cheek, embarrassing, gratuitous display of self-promotion, I would like to take whatever credit I can for tipping the Suns off to Hornacek as a future candidate.
Yeah, you know what, and as the consultant for the Phoenix Suns, which you clearly are based on your writing, you need to get on the books there. It's pretty obvious that you're giving them a lot of information and they're not paying you for it, so you need to really work on getting on the books for them. Now you kind of drifted into draft conversation there, and that's kind of now, hey, the Suns, they got their general manager, they sewed that up. The general manager then went and pounced on a head coach, and now that's sewed up. So He also, over this past week, Brian McDonough's brought in a few staff members to kind of build his scouting staff with a former general manager, and also grabbing a guy that was Mitch Kupchak's right-hand man with the Los Angeles Lakers. So he brought in two guys that are well-respected around the league and have had success around the league at the high level to kind of help him along the way and also be part of his scouting staff. So he's putting together his staff. He's got his head coach. Now the shift focuses over to the NBA draft. And, you know, fans out there, what you mentioned game coverage. So we do a lot of game coverage. I think we do 82 of them in any given year, sometimes less if there's a lockout. But 82 games of game coverage. And I think there was
also more if the Suns ever make the playoffs again.
Well, more specifically this year. So we do 82 games of game coverage. And I think for the last 40 games, maybe 40-plus games, every single game thread probably in some way, shape, or manner referenced, hey, the Suns could probably afford to lose this game to be able to help them out in the draft and make sure that they position themselves correctly. Jim, talk to me a little bit about who won the NBA draft lottery, what slot they were in, and which team could have been there.
Yeah, the team that won the draft lottery, of course, was the Cleveland Cavaliers. And like you were referencing there, the Suns had some opportunities to lose some games that ended up being Pyrrhic victories. And things really came undone for them right at the end of the season because they won a couple games against the Lakers that people were peacocking around a little bit and thinking that that was going to help keep the Lakers out of the playoffs so they'd get that second lottery pick. Instead, the Lakers sneak in and get immediately swept out, but the Suns lose that draft pick, and they manage to finish a game behind Cleveland, who wins the lottery. So the Suns shot themselves in the foot. If they lose two more games, they're selecting number one. If they lose one more game, then they would have been in a tie, and so those lottery combinations would have been split up. So it's possible there that when those were divvied out, apportioned based off of that split between the teams, that one of those winning combinations, the winning combination, might have been slotted to the Suns. So two more losses, we're picking number one. One more loss, we might be picking number one. Instead, we have a couple feel-good victories. We win that season finale against the Rockets in pretty convincing fashion. And instead of having that number one pick, we are now drafting fifth.
So I want to piggyback on that a little bit and hear me out, as I can be exhaustive in the way I talk sometimes. The Phoenix Suns, let's say they win those games, they climb up to the third spot and they end up winning the draft lottery, they get the number one pick. Doesn't mean they take the guy that's rated number one by everybody. They take the guy that they want for sure and they get that guy. So that's all sunshines and rainbows. But here's kind of a small theory as a guy that tries to pretend that he knows a little bit about the NBA draft. When the Phoenix Suns fell down to number five, it ensured that they're probably not going to get Nerlens Noel. They're probably not going to get Ben McLemore, two guys that are raw anyway. So it's not like they're going to come onto a team and cause like an influx of 10 wins and have an amazing impact on the team. Both those guys are probably going to come in and be very minor no matter what team they fall on in terms of their role. And Nerlens is not going to play very much. I would just shut him down for the entire year, but he'll have the ability to come back in around January. So you fall down to number five. Now you're in a position where, you know, maybe you take a center because all the wings are gone, like Otto Porter and Victor Oladipo and McLemore as mentioned. Maybe they're all gone. You decide to go center. You grab the Gortat replacement. You have him sit at the back of the bench there. You only play him when needed, and he gets to learn from Gortat for a year before you ship him out or let him go. So you get like Alex Len or Rudy Gobert or whatever center you feel is of high value. Well, this Suns roster is still awful no matter what player you bring in as a rookie. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. So no matter what player you bring in as a rookie, you basically want this player to be someone that fits into your long-term goal, is not going to duplicate a position down the road. You still have to win a lottery, but I think in this theory, falling down to five is not a bad thing because you might be able to get a value pick that'll be able to be built off of for next year's draft. You don't have to win the lottery in 2014 to win the lottery. You know, if you can fall into that, you know, top four range, you're probably going to get a guy that's going to make a very, very major impact on your franchise from day one and eventually be a very good player in this league. So my theory on falling back to five is don't be that upset. You may not get the guy that you really wanted top four. You might end, you might get a backup center, but that backup center might turn into your starting center next year, and it might all lead up to you guys end up, the Phoenix Suns as a team, having a duplicate year, finishing maybe in the top 3 to 4 as terms of the worst record, have a chance to win the lottery, and maybe you're looking at Andrew Wiggins playing with that backup center that you guys despised as a rookie, or Jabari Parker, or some of these guys that are have the ability to be transcendent players at the NBA level. So that's kind of my theory. I've always thought that whoever gets number one should take Nerlens Noel, so that way you basically can have a chance to get two number one picks, because he won't play next year, and you know, you might have a chance to win the 14 lottery. But I think falling back to like 5, 6, 7, 8 if you're a team like the Phoenix Suns, hey, you know, grab the best player available, make sure he fits into your plan, put all your ducks into the 2014 NBA draft and offseason, and that's where you can maybe find the guy that leads the franchise. It's another year of bad basketball, but it's an opportunity to maybe build your team and create a situation where you can be really good in 2 to 3 years.
After the lottery, when the Suns figured out, it was determined that they were going to be picking fifth, like I had projected, obviously I wasn't taking too far of a reach because that's what the odds said. But McDonough spoke after that, and I had made a little joke of what he said, and it was something along the lines of, you know, we're happy to be picking fifth. We think that there are at least five good players, more than five good players, and went off on that, and that what he was thinking was, oh, we're totally screwed. I only had 3 or 4 A-rated prospects in this draft, and now we just fell down far enough that we won't be able to get one. And really, I haven't done any in-depth scouting, looking at some of these players individually, and I'll get a chance to do that over the coming weeks when the Suns are bringing guys in for interviews, workouts, that stuff. But the four that you just pull off the top right there, Noel, McLemore, Oladipo, and Porter, I really want the Suns to get one of those four guys, and I think that's the four guys off the board when they pick at fifth. So hopefully McMiracle can pull a rabbit out of his hat there and find the next best remaining guy on the board if the Suns hold and keep that fifth pick and draft there.
Yeah, and I think this is a topic we need to explore more in the podcast, where we're not sitting at the 30-minute mark and needing to get out of here before people start pulling their hair out and seeing purple and orange every time they blink. But we really need to expand on the fact that when the Suns go up at number five, those four could be gone. And is my theory of grabbing a center the smartest thing to do? Is grabbing a guy like Trey Burke the smartest thing to do, and an undersized four in Anthony Bennett? So it'll be real interesting at number five, because there's a chance all four of those guys are gone, and there's a chance that two or three of them are still sitting there. So, and we'll get into that a little bit more expansive as we get closer to the draft. Now, quick update for Suns fans. For those that really genuinely follow this team, like obsessively, you know that over the past couple of years, the media is basically cut off to the workouts. We're not even told who's coming in to work out, so we can't inform the fans and we can't let you guys know. Well, I talked to Ryan McDonough. He said that the media is actually going to be allowed in, I'm not going to say all, but for most of the workouts, we're going to be able to check out the last 10 minutes or so. We're going to be able to talk to the prospects. We're going to be able to talk to Ryan and now, you know, Coach Hornacek, as you know, after they get done doing the workouts with the players. So as that's going down the next couple of weeks, you know, we'll be able to keep you guys in the loop, let you guys know what's going on. According to Hoops Hype and their draft workout board, which is, it's imperfect at the moment because he's only talked to the agents he's talked to, but the Suns have only got one workout scheduled here for this week. Ryan said he wanted to get really hardcore into the workouts after Memorial Day weekend. Obviously, the coach ended up happening, so they're probably going to get really into it with workouts starting next week, but they got Zeke Marshall of Akron coming in, basically a 7-footer that can block shots. That's really all Zeke Marshall is. He's a very, very late second-round pick type of a player. So, you know, he's a guy that they're bringing in. He's a guy that they're going to look at. Maybe someone they'll consider with that late, late second round pick, but not a guy that you're going to be looking at with the 30th pick or a guy you'll be looking at with the fifth pick. So as we get more on the NBA draft, as we get workouts going, you'll definitely be informed here on Brightside. We'll be getting out of the information as soon as we get it.
I like the open door policy better. The last, I don't know if you can necessarily call it a regime because some of those guys are still around, but the cloak and dagger stuff regarding the draft seemed, I don't know, I guess unnecessary. I'm not sure why they chose to go that route. Maybe it was just because they didn't want to give people a better view of their incompetence because the personnel decisions were mostly bad and sometimes baffling. So I guess you don't want to give people more insight to how you're screwing things up.
Yeah, the only way, and this has been talked out by numerous people, not just me coming up with this, but if you're hitting home runs every single time with the NBA draft, then you have an excuse. You have a rationale to go, hey, guys, we know what we're doing. We don't need you guys in here kind of mucking around. We got a process. We're hitting home runs every time. You guys aren't allowed to come in. But when you're not, you know, you have to have something else. If you're not the prettiest girl in the room, you better have a great personality. If you don't have an amazing personality, you better, you know, make sure you take advantage of those looks as best as possible. So with the Phoenix Suns, they didn't have the most amazing personality in the world, and, you know, they also didn't look very good during those draft processes, and it kind of stood out. And now they're going to get a chance to at least show us not necessarily what they're doing, but kind of peek behind the curtain, and also just knowing who's coming in. That's huge, because with the fifth pick, I would imagine, unless you're some kid who thinks he's a superstar and the agent thinks there's absolutely zero chance ever that they're going to fall to five, the Suns should be able to get every top 10 pick type player in here to Phoenix for at least an interview, a private workout, one-on-one time, maybe not an extensive workout, but probably, you know, working out against a chair kind of a workout. So those will be interesting. If I can get 10 minutes of watching Cody Zeller go one-on-one against a chair, I'm going to be excited. I don't know about you guys, but that'll probably make my year.
Yeah, that's what they need to do with that fifth pick, like I had referenced earlier. Just like last year when Portland was up at six, they took Lillard, and it's almost a foregone conclusion that at number six, they got the best player available, the best player left on the board. And if they stay at five, then that's what McMerrickle needs to do. And I know that I've been given this title of being negative, pessimistic, captious, critical, but I've always said that the Suns just haven't given me a whole lot of reasons to give them glowing praise. And when they hired McDonough, I was cautiously optimistic. I liked the hire, but you know, it's hard to know for sure until the rubber hits the road with these kinds of things. But then the hiring of Hornacek made me feel better about McDonough, as, you know, him making that his kind of first official stamp on the team, because I like that hire. And so I'm pretty impressed so far. I'm happy with the way things are going so far this offseason, and I feel better about the Suns now than I have since they walked off the court in the Western Conference Finals against the Lakers in 2010.
Yeah, and that'll be, like I said, with the NBA draft stuff, I think we're going to have a nice, expansive dialogue there. Talked to Lon Babbie today. We might end up hopefully pulling his ear or, you know, someone within the organization down the road here to get on to jump on the podcast. But I think next week is going to be, you know, get in there, Jim, and start doing your homework, whether it's Synergy, YouTube, videos, Basketball Reference, whatever you got to do. And we're going to have a nice expansive NBA draft conversation next week, I think, with what the Suns could and should and would and might do with that five pick and the genuine importance of that number 30 pick that David written about as well. So guys, check out Brightside nonstop coverage. Hey, even Mercury game coverage was on there. So, I mean, you can't say we just write about basketball, whatever's being bounced, we're writing about. So, you know, check out Brightside, check out all the coverage. Jim knocking it out of the park. Tons of baseball references. I don't know why. Sorry, guys. But killing it with his player reviews. Everyone else on there killing it with the coverage of the Phoenix Suns here this offseason. So make sure you're checking out Brightside. We'll be back next week with some NBA draft talk. Jim, you always leave us with some wise, sage advice.
Hey, you were telling me to do some research. You know how I do it. I always play it by the seat of my pants. So expect more of that next week. And in the interregnum between our recordings, go Pacers.
And that's how we end podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Talk to you guys next week.